I did take a 4-hour improv workshop and I was horrible. I thought I was going to find my calling. I was like, I probably won't come back from this. Like, I'll probably just be an improv comedian.
You're listening to Well Made. I'm Stefan Ango, co-founder of Lumi. My whole life, I've been asking myself the same question. What does it mean to make things well? This is the show where we talk to creators, entrepreneurs, movers and shakers, people who have become experts in their field and can shed light on that simple question, what makes something well made? Good morning.
Good morning.
Wait, are you doing it on purpose? Jen Gotch, we have Jen Gotch in the studio, founder, chief creative officer of Bando.
That's right.
I feel the need to preface this because I woke up this morning and literally couldn't talk. And I was like, I have a couple hours before I need to record a podcast. The thing I like the least in the world is being like a flake. Aww. And having to like, you know, change things at the last second. So I was like, what kind of remedies can I find on the internet? Tried, you know, doing vocal exercises. So I went from no voice to this. Oh. So it's an improvement.
I mean, I think it sounds nice. So,
well, the people are here to listen to you, and so we'll try and focus on that while I sip my warm mixture of various spices and things that I could find in my cupboard. I wanted to start with a current obsession of yours before we dive into things. Tell me about Nick Kroll and what's going on with Nick Kroll these days.
Well, we're
I'm making, a fan, by the way. I love Nick Kroll as well.
You know, I guess I do too. He was certainly on my radar, but then I saw him. I have some friends that have this comedy group. I guess they're a comedy group called the Wild Horses. They're like an improv group, but these four girls. And he was a guest at their show that I went to see. And then I was like, wait a second. I think I love Nick Kroll. He was talking about how he was mad because I think it was his housekeeper or somebody like didn't put his LaCroix in the right way. And I was like, I can identify with that really.
There's a lot of flavors now.
Yeah. And he was trying to like work past the anger. And I was just like, he's working on himself. This is great. So yeah. So then I thought the next like most normal thing to do would be take it to Instagram where I could share that with like 160,000 people.
Yeah.
Only like your most vulnerable self.
Do you know if he's caught wind of that yet?
He has.
Oh,
he,
good.
Yeah. We're at the very, very beginning phases of what will hopefully be a very long love affair. But I think he knows I exist.
That's the first step.
Yeah. Right?
Well, yeah. That's like a classic marketing thing. If they don't know you exist, then they can't.
They can't even decide if they're interested. Yeah.
In what form has this taken on Instagram so far?
Well, I've noticed that he's watched some of my stories. I wish I could sort of like direct him to the ones that I want him to watch and the ones that I'm like, that's not really a great sense of who I am.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories surrounding my feet today, so I'm kind of hoping he doesn't see them unless he really likes feet.
Maybe he likes feet. Maybe he's a Tarantino.
He didn't talk about that.
Kind of guy.
It's not my feet at their best self because they were swollen from a sunburn and travel. When I look on his feed, I'm like, there's so many girls just trying to get a date with him. I kind of thought was going to be like out on my own on this. Mm. I don't know why. We have friends in common and I don't think he knows that yet. And I was just like trying to not leverage that until the last minute. So we'll see. I mean, I will definitely keep everyone posted on that.
we'll come back to comedy, but just for the people, give a little bit of context on what is Bando? How do you describe it these days?
I don't know how to describe it. And literally driving over here, I'm like, there's nothing about doing podcasts or even like speaking in front of people makes me nervous, but trying to like encapsulate what Bando is, I've just never had a great elevator pitch for our brand. And then it changes. Every time I get it on lock, it's like, oh, wait, we're something different. But if I was going to try.
What is it today?
Today, I've been out for a week, so I couldn't tell you. But before I left, it's a lifestyle brand really focused on millennial women. We promote optimism and self-expression, and we're mostly known for promoting fun. I like to include some serious stuff in there too, like hard work and camaraderie and inclusivity and all of that. So we're kind of trying to take a positive approach on being cool instead of the norm, sort of edgy, negative, you know, which tends to be a little bit cooler, but I'm an eternal optimist. So we make all sorts of products, and then we also sell other people's products on our website because I felt like it would be a great way to support artists and smaller businesses. And now it's grown. So we have Levi's, I don't think needs our support from what I can tell, but
yeah, that's amazing.
We've branched out to some, to have a mix of like large brands and smaller companies.
And when you work with those types of brands, is it collaborations or is it mostly selling their products?
Both. We were doing collaborations, but they were sort of small. And then we've done some larger ones now. Like we did a big collaboration with Starbucks this past year that was in the China, Asia Pacific market, which they do these big designer in and outs there. So where people like line up and go crazy and, you know, but online it's sort of a mix. So we've done, I'm trying to do it now where most of the things that we take are exclusive to our site because there's so many websites that you can buy products from now. So that's like a collaboration of sorts where maybe somebody's selling a bulletin board or something. And we're like, can we have that in pink exclusively? Because, you know, so there's some things that are small like that. And then some collaborations that are a little bit larger where we're like partnering on creative direction and packaging and photography and all of that. So it kind of runs the gamut.
I think people know you very well for the agendas. Like, is that still one of the top sellers? The number one thing?
Yeah. So crazy because it was a total accident and it wasn't like I was an agenda person. Like I'm definitely, because I'm older, I'm definitely a paper person. Like I sometimes prefer to have something tactile like that, but I didn't use an agenda because I was like, well, I have a computer. But we found, obviously, there's like a whole subculture around agenda use and all of the paraphernalia that you use around that. So it was like, maybe it was 4 or 5 years ago. It was right after we sold the company and our parent company had seen some luck with that. And they were like, you should make an agenda. And I was like, what is an agenda? And they're like, oh, like a day planner. And then I looked around. And so we tried to kind of come up with something that wasn't out there. I mean, obviously there's like a particular format. You need dates, you need calendars, but you know, we tried to make it really original and it obviously struck a chord with a lot of people. And so, yeah, that's still like,
how do you bandeauify the agenda? What does that mean?
You know, for me, I'm definitely, and I think I'm a little bit less like this now after being in business. My mom told me dare to be different when I was like 7 and it just like really stuck. So originality, I think, is like where we start from. And so it was like, if we were going to do this, like how would we do something that isn't out there? So for us, it was like, being original, being irreverent, being colorful, and being very personal. Like what I was sort of finding in a lot of what I saw was that it was just kind of like serious. Maybe you'd get an inspirational quote, but it was like very, very clean looking. And I was like, I wanted it to feel like your friend had gotten a hold of it and did some doodling and wrote, like, you know, in handwriting, a little compliment for you on a random day or, everything I was looking at, like it was very uniform. Like they, like whoever had designed each agenda had been like, okay, our month openers will always be like pink with black text or like a repeat of a pattern. And I was like, let's just do all kinds of crazy stuff. And then that's how we sort of started working with outside artists, because at that point there were like 4 of us and none of us could really draw. A couple of us thought we could draw, but we couldn't really draw. So we started asking friends. And then now all these years later, that's a huge part is like it really being sort of eclectic and not uniform. And we use artists from all over the world to help create that, because that's kind of a hard thing to do if one or two in-house designers are trying to be eclectic.
You mentioned that you had 4 people at the time.
Yeah.
You're now 40 or something like that?
Yeah, there's 40, I think 40, give or take, in our office. Then our parent company has an office in Kentucky that I feel like probably has at least 100 people. And then we have like a little overseas, couple offices overseas, small offices. But yeah, most of the growth in the LA office happened over the last like 12 to 18 months. So wow. We hired like 30 people in an 8-month period. I don't know. They're on Slack a lot. Yeah. planning lunch.
That's good.
You they're doing everything that the four of us were doing. Mm, so it's
bigger.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there were definitely days where I was like, should we just go back to four? Because it's obviously more complicated with more people, but more fun too, you know, just different.
And 40 people, you have hundreds of thousands of people following you now on Instagram, seems to be the biggest for you. I want to zoom all the way back to like the beginning, because in just learning about you, it seems like you've had just about every job under the sun. And I feel that I've never really been employed other than my own company.
Yeah.
But I feel like I've had every job.
Yeah. Well, if you've been employed at your own company, you have had a lot of jobs. Yeah.
Can you list some of the jobs that you've had over the years that you can remember?
Personal shopper, gift wrapper, rickshaw driver, barista. Definitely did a stint in retail. I had a vintage furniture and antiques business called Vincent's Ear and Other Lost Treasures. Mm. Shout out to Vincent Van Gogh.
If he's listening.
I don't know if he can hear. Let's see. Then I was like, oh, I did script reading. I went to bartending school, but never bartended. But my dad still wants the $1,000 that he spent on that. Then I did some copywriting. I should mention that I was pre-law in college, but that didn't pan out. When it really happened for me, and that I was probably 30 at the time, 29, I got into food and prop styling. I was an on-set dresser and then a set decorator prior to that. And I kind of remember being at one of the prop houses. I was working on like a music video. I worked on Eminem's first music video.
Oh, wow.
So that's my big set claim to fame. And I remember being in the prop house and like looking at the other women that were set decorators, and they were probably 35 and just seemed really haggard, because it's a hard, hard job. I mean, most of your days are 16 hours and I thought, I don't think I want to do this. And then I had heard about prop styling, which was similar to set stuff, but in a little bit more of a humane environment. And so, so I got into that. I inadvertently messaged a food stylist. I didn't know how to cook at the time, but she had a job a job that I could work for free the next day. So I learned how to make a turkey look cooked, even though it wasn't.
Wow.
I worked on a turkey cooker.
How does that work?
You do. Really? You paint it and then you use like a little blowtorch to like crisp the edges. Mm. But I was so fascinated that I ended up working for her for like 3 years. And then did food styling and prop styling for like 10 years, and then was just starting to get into photography, because I realized, man, the photographers are making like 10 times what I'm making, and I'm bringing everything, setting it up, and even sometimes, you know, discussing lighting and composition. I'm like, if I could just learn how to use a camera, I could be making like $5,000 a day instead of 500.
Right.
So I was starting to pursue that when Bando happened, which was just like kind of an accident. Never planned it to be what it was. You know, it's interesting because I certainly did, in rattling off those, I'm sure I missed 100 other jobs, but I always say, like, you know, I fought so much with my parents over every job, because they were like, can't you just pick a job and stick with it? But really almost everything I did helped me. Oh, I was a copywriter too. Helped prepare me for having a business outside of anything with money management. I definitely needed help in that.
Bookkeeping school?
I really didn't. I just learned how to add like last week. So yeah, my numbers were never good.
I feel very much like a generalist. Like I like getting just past the level of a newbie at everything.
Yeah.
And then there's a handful of things where I think I'm actually really good at that.
Yeah.
But I like exploring a lot of different things. And yeah, while it might seem like it was just being lost at sea, maybe it was building all those different skills that you need now today, and helps you when you're managing 40 people empathize with each and every one of them on their particular job or whatever they're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, also when I think back, you know, when I was in college, I didn't know any of those jobs existed.
Right.
You know, it was like, we didn't have the internet. We, you know, I barely had a word processor, and I just, you didn't know outside of like doctor, lawyer, business person, salesperson. Yeah. You know, you knew there was like creative arts, and but I really, a lot of those jobs I didn't find out until I moved out to California. And then, so I do think I spent a lot of time just exploring. I don't even think I realized that I was creative until after college.
Yeah.
And I had been creative my whole life, but no one had really identified that.
Yeah, I was 20 or 21. I was pursuing a biology degree until, my only degree is in biology, but then I ended up going into design and all this other stuff. And I had always been poking around at that kind of stuff, but never knew that it was an actual career job that people could have.
Yeah.
Do you think kids nowadays have a better perspective on that?
I think they have a perspective that we'll never understand because of what they have at their fingertips every day. So it's just like the world is so much smaller that I just think of all the people you know now digitally.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like just having that be your context from being a kid all the way up. I don't even know.
Yeah. When I was growing up, all my friends were on the internet, even at that time.
Yeah.
But I was a big nerd. So now it's normal. Like now it's normal. Back in, you know, the 90s, it wasn't the normal thing to be on the internet talking to other kids.
Yeah. Well, you're ahead of your time.
But when you describe Bando as being for millennial women, what do you see when you picture that in your mind? Who is the audience?
In my mind, it's actually really broad. I just know that from an age perspective, that's sort of our, you know, that's probably like 75% of our customer base and our audience. But within that, I find that it's a really diverse group, because I think what we appeal to is something that goes beyond just like a surface thing. And especially because we're kind of blurry around the edges. So, you know, there are other brands that are, you know, so easily defined. And I think like the fact that we're not defined is what defines us and what gives us a broad appeal. So like when we would have, I mean, I missed our warehouse sale this weekend, but anytime we'll do a shopping event or anything, you look at the group of people that show up. And it's so interesting to me because it's whatever the opposite of homogenous is what it is. You know, it's like a very, okay, I was gonna say diverse, but I like that better. But it really does run the gamut, and which makes me so happy, because everything that I articulated about Bando, we didn't articulate any of that going in. You know, it was really based on my personality and my old partner's personality and just our perspective. And I think I'm a pretty inclusive person and like happy to be vulnerable and not great at keeping my own secrets. I can keep other people's secrets, but like putting it all out there. And so I think that resonates with people in different ways. And for the people that are like, oh, I don't like color, or like, it's too youthful. I mean, eventually they find their way to us and in. So yeah, a lot of those I think are just words that I've been trained to use, but that's why it's so hard for me to describe, because it really is a lot more than that.
Yeah. I guess at this point, the number of headlines that come out about millennials has taken it over the edge.
Yeah. It's a little crazy. You know, I'm Generation X, but I have a lot of millennial tendencies. I was just with my college friends this weekend, and we were talking about it, because it is really different. But again, you know, it wasn't what I see now a lot in business is people that didn't have a millennial audience trying to reroute and cater to millennials. And then it's like so manufactured, and I think they're missing the point. And for us, we just got lucky. Like everything that we were doing happened to be what, I mean, even just the fact that like pink's my favorite color and it's their favorite color we didn't do research on that. I mean, the term millennial wasn't even really used. At least I wasn't aware of it when we started 9 years ago. I don't know. So yeah, I think now it's sort of turning into this whole other thing, which I wouldn't be negative about, because it's still a positive thing for us, but
yeah, I think one thing that I find myself wanting to correct people all the time is that millennial is there's so many people who are past that now.
Yeah.
I think millennial covers people who are now starting at like 23 or 24 yeah. is like the cutoff. And then it's like Gen Z and Gen yeah. Alpha and whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So at this point, you, in your audience, I'm assuming so many of them must be the next generation yeah. as well.
Well, for sure. Gen Z is definitely big. And then there was Generation Y that I
That's
feel like no one talks about. But
That's
then it was like they took the top of the bottom of Gen Y, then dripped into millennials. But like there were people I knew that were like millennials, but I'm like, but you're Gen Y.
But Gen Y is millennials is what I thought. No?
No. Wrong? I mean, I don't think so. I feel like the circles overlap.
Oh,
but
maybe.
But I think that millennials went younger. Mm-hmm. And at least I had heard a lot about Gen Y before I ever heard about millennials. And then, like I'm saying, the people that I would know that were at the top of the millennial, I'm like, even there's even diversity within that. But yeah, I'm like, they get older every year. So you can try and frame something for them. But like in 4 years, they're going to be in a completely different place in their life. Either they'd be out of college, or if you figure 4 years in the workforce, you know, right. married, kid, you know.
I guess the question behind that is, do you feel like you're more attached to the cohort of people or the age group of people? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or neither.
Okay, neither. Right. I mean, for me, I'm always trying to broaden. I'm always trying to go older and younger because I feel like there could be something for everyone. And I think also just because, you know, I was thinking about it the other day, just because my lifestyle is a little bit different and I never had kids. And so like, I'm not drawn into certain you know, it's like I'm perpetually 30. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's something in that, but now that we have all these people, like you can start to look at all of the different lifestyles and start addressing those through products and services and stuff. So I'm not stuck on that at all. I'd actually like really love to get in with like 9 or 10 year olds and just like secure it for a lifelong customer because Lifeguard Press, our parent company, does licensing and for much larger brands. And Lilly Pulitzer, which I don't know if you know Lilly Pulitzer because you're not really in their demographic, but their demographic is Southern women mostly. And I mean, it goes from there, but they're a heritage brand, been around. Maybe they were established. Someone would have to fact check this, but I think maybe in the 60s or 70s. But I remember like in college, because I'm from South Florida, you know, it was like a big deal to have like a Lilly Pulitzer or something. And then now I look at my friends that have college age kids and like their kids are into Lilly Pulitzer. They're into Lilly Pulitzer. Their moms are into Lilly Pulitzer and their grandmas are into Lilly Pulitzer. And so, you know, there's a consistency about Lilly Pulitzer that allows for that. But I'm like, could we do something like that where it's like you love it when you're young because your mom has it or your older sister has it. And then you just, it's just like a through line for your life.
Everybody associates with, I think, the ethos and the philosophy of Bando and the, I guess fun is the word that you guys use the most, maybe. I'm not sure.
It was actually used on us before we used it. And then I was like, oh, yeah. I guess it is fun.
How do you define that word for yourselves? How do you decide? Because you must have some sort of way you decide, especially as you're growing.
I know.
What is fun and what's not fun? Or what is Mando and what is not?
You know, that's actually been one of the biggest challenges within the growth because the small group that we had, it just was in our bloodstream. So for me as a C-level person in a multi-million dollar company, I should probably be able to articulate better than I can, but I never had to because you just knew. It was like you could flash things and be like, no, yes, yes, no. And a lot of the girls there have challenged me to help define that. And it's hard because so much of it is born from me and my mood that it's like, 6 months from now, the things that would be a yes right. or a no, and vice, they're like, oh, you hated that the last time we showed you. I'm like, well, I don't know. I changed my mind. So, you know, for the broader thing, I mean, for fun, you know, I think it's just things that make you feel happy. I mean, it's sort of like whatever makes you feel the opposite of like stress, unhappiness. It doesn't have to be wild and crazy, but that certainly falls into it. But I do think there's just something generally about what we're putting out that people just identify as fun. And I think, you know, fun is something that I value, but it's not like I gotta be out having fun. Like, to me, that's not fun. I mean, sorry, that is fun. Being out having fun is fun, but it's not as narrow as that for me. You know, sometimes cooking dinner for myself could be fun. You know, it means a lot of different things. I think it's more of a feeling than like an activity, so.
And so do you find that in hiring people that you are looking for people who sort of have that same philosophy?
I don't feel like we were leading with that necessarily, but we definitely recognized that we had a company culture that we wanted to preserve. For me, that mostly has to do with, are you nice or are you a jerk? And and so that's my baseline. I prefer only nice people. We definitely turned down some very qualified candidates that I just thought were not going to be that great to be around.
A jerk of some sort.
And then beyond that, smart and hardworking. And then it kind of really diverges from there. So it's, we weren't like, oh, you have to be fun loving. You know, I think if you're applying at Bando, like you probably on some level have an appreciation for that, but also, people that lead with fun tend to be not as employable, you know, if you think about your fun friend and that's like always drunk or whatever. So, which is like one of the first things that people tell me when they meet me, they're like, yeah, you're not as fun as I thought you'd be. I'm like, well, I'm trying to like survive. So there's a lot of seriousness around survival.
Yeah. Well, I want to come back to that topic. One thing that you mentioned a couple of times is the acquisition of Bando. I'd be curious to hear a little bit how that happened, where it came from, how you thought through it. And now that it has happened, it's been a couple of years
five years.
Yeah. You know, what has been the outcome for you of that?
Well, I will say that I feel like we got very, very, very lucky. I think this is atypical. So basically, Jamie Coulter, who I started Bando with, she wanted to move out of state because her husband had started a business in Dallas because they had both gone to school in Texas. And so he had just started this business. They were still living in California, but he was kind of going back and forth. And, you know, they realized that the business had legs and they wanted to move. And I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this by myself. I mean, and at that point, again, it was, now that I have context, it was nothing, but it's still the way we had divided things. And so we were like, you know, we had a few employees at that time. Most of them were part-time, but I was like, man, I don't want to just like shut it down. And this was probably at about the 3-year mark. So we were like, let's just try and sell it. I mean, it wasn't like we're going to make a gazillion dollars. Like we really weren't making that much money at the time, but I think we knew we had something. And so we put it up for sale. She happened to know someone who was part of a young president's organization out here that was like able to access the group via email. So like he did that on our behalf and we got a ton of interest from that. Cause I think we've always appeared larger than we are because we understand like visuals and aesthetic and stuff. And so like a lot of people, once they started looking at the numbers, were like, oh yeah, we're not interested.
Wow. But just go back for one second. What was that list that you were talking about of young presidents? Oh, what is that?
Yeah. So it's YPOs are like young presidents organizations. It's usually like under 40. And I think your company has to be worth $10 million or something to be in the club. So, so it's just a lot of business people. I feel like they have YPOs all over the world, but I'm making that up. I know that there's one here and that's the one that that's the chapter that
And it was basically just sending an email to the newsletter or something and just saying like, hey, we need to sell this.
So I think from what I remember, each member had the ability to email out to the group in their chapter 3 times a year, whatever they wanted. And so he was like, I'll give you one of my, I mean, I think he was like, if you sell it, I'll take a percentage, you know, a small percentage of the sale. But yeah, so we kind of just did like an offering like an offering letter or something. And I mean, that's where most of the interest came from. That wasn't the only avenue that we were going down to try and sell. I mean, we were doing a lot of word of mouth stuff, but again, it wasn't like we were a company that anyone had heard of. So it wasn't like on the wire or anything.
And so the company, what is it called?
Lifeguard Press.
Lifeguard Press. The found you guys was through that.
Mm-hmm. And it's a privately owned company. So Todd and Kim Ferrier, they own Lifeguard Press and they're like my age, cool, young, you know, so it wasn't like this like big corporate entity came in and was like, we're going to restructure. You know, they were basically like, I think they saw something in me and in Bando where they could take the business, manufacturing, distribution, sales, warehousing knowledge, all of that, and like take what we knew about like branding and marketing and creativity and merge them and be successful. And that's what happened. But that's what I'm saying. Like normally, yeah. You know, there's like personality conflicts and a difference of opinion and ideas. And I'm sure there are other people out there that have had a great experience. But I think mostly what you hear is that, especially as a creative, that you're kind of being silenced or, you know, being told. And certainly there were things where they're like, no, you can't do that. But they let me do a lot of things that they thought would never work that did. And they also let me do a lot of things that I was absolutely sure would work that did not. But either way.
And so what is the relationship like today? Do you operate kind of independently or is it very collaborative? How does it actually
function? It's a little bit of both. For Todd and Kim aren't as involved in the day-to-day. I feel like for the first year and a half, Todd was in our office every day, like really kind of training us. Our president, he's the president of Lifeguard Press as well. So like a lot of the guys, like the top level of our organization work out of the Kentucky office. So we're in contact with them. And we, you know, we convene monthly, sometimes more than that, to talk about really important stuff. But otherwise, you know, we operate semi-independently. I feel like they're like really unprotective parents that are actually watching our every move, but letting us do it. And so, and now that there's so many of us, you know, it's like we come together on like top level decisions and that stuff, but the rest of it is no one's like checking, not in a bad way. I mean, I guess we've gained their trust and vice versa. You know, it was hard. The first couple of years, it was much different. But I mean, now we have a track record and we all know each other and we trust each other. So.
And with all the expansion that you've been doing lately, what is the goal? Where do you want to take this? What are you aiming for?
$100 million? I don't know.
I mean, it doesn't have to be financial. Just what are you trying to accomplish?
You know, it's interesting because I've never been great with goal setting or really like looking to the future. I mean, I'm trying so hard to get better at that because I mean, I know a lot of people, especially at Bando, that are really driven by plans. And I mean, for me personally, look, you know, I'm so dug in now. Yeah. I just want to see like from a business growth standpoint, it's sort of a fun challenge to see. I think there's a lot we can do to expand. For me personally, I would love to expand beyond just like making stuff and selling stuff because I feel like there's a lot just within the philosophy of our brand that could be more community building. And, you know, we do a little bit of that now, but it hasn't been priority number one because we're a business and, you know, there's obviously like financial responsibility in running a business. But I think like there's a potential for us to be a company like no other company. And what exactly that looks like, I don't know, but that's sort of how I try and base my decisions is like, is there a way to disrupt or innovate at every point? And you have to kind of do that a lot because the thing is like you disrupt or innovate and then everyone else is like, oh, I like that. I'm going to do that. You know? So I think the exercise of like how many products and, you know, and designs could we slap our visual aesthetic and like our sense of humor. And obviously like so much of what we do is like graphic text and sayings. And like, I feel like that's been really satisfied in me. And so now I'm interested in like, how else can we get into people's lives and influence them? I don't think that we would move away from products, but I just everything I know about being alive is like, there's more to it than, you know, there's so much more about the experience and memories and all of that. So, I mean, I'd like to see a way to like maintain the baseline and try some other stuff like that.
It feels like the way you portray Bando and yourself on social media and just through the products themselves is very authentic to who you are.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you go about marketing that? Or do you feel like it's more of a, you know, if you build it, they will come type of thing where people find themselves learning about Bando through their friends? Or like, mm-hmm. do you feel like that was just a very natural transition? Like if people look at what you're doing today on social media, there it's like big numbers. There's a lot of people looking at this stuff. There's yeah. a lot of, there is this community now. But how did you get there? Was it very organic?
Yeah, like literally one person at a time.
Yeah.
And I think the secret for us was consistency. And because it was driven by authenticity and not like a business plan, we were able to like very seamlessly bob and weave, which is obviously like with marketing, something that you need to do. So I think there's been like this through line that we've sort of gone in and, you know, danced around it, but staying authentic. And I didn't say it this way years ago, but like valuing the connection over the transaction was really important to me because I think that's just a more solid relationship than like I sold you something. And so our marketing is driven more. It's just not very salesy. It probably to a fault. I mean, we would probably be making a lot more money if I was like, let's just let go of that. But I just don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. And I think like with social media, with Bando, it really was just the relentless pursuit of an audience. And we're, and a lot of us at our core, you know, like the girls that have been there for a long time, I always say, I feel like we're content creators at heart that just ended up in the product business sort of. But so it all came very naturally to us. Cause like a lot of times people will ask me questions about social media. I'm like, oh, I didn't even really think about that.
Right.
Like it was just obvious what to do next. So I think we have challenges ahead of us of how we're going to continue to stay current and stay true to ourselves and grow. But yeah, for me as a person, I just want to be liked. So I just applied that to a business. Yeah.
Well, but I think one thing that's fascinating to me is part of being authentic is being real about the fun and the hard parts
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
And that's something that you talk a lot about.
Yeah.
You know, depression and those types of things are subjects where the contrast becomes even more obvious.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about fun. We're talking about creating a mood and a philosophy that everyone aspires to, but in reality, every entrepreneur that I know has like those dark moments.
For sure.
But not, almost none of them share them.
Yeah.
You know? But it's something that you do. You do share.
For sure. I mean, look, the thing is there's a real challenge with how to include that in the business dialogue and the brand dialogue. And I don't feel like we've truly figured that out yet. And that was a big reason why I wanted to have my own personal account. And cause I think a lot of people think they're talking to me when they're talking to Bando for many years. And I was like, oh, I don't even run that. Like someone else runs that. You can't get away with all of that. I mean, there's just more at stake but it felt like, there's other things that I want to talk about. So I was like, I'm just going to do this. And I also feel like I've been really lucky there because I think there's probably a lot of jobs where my boss would probably be like, can you not do that?
Right.
Like I'm always waiting for that to drop. But I felt like my goal, obviously like Bando has a lot more followers than I do, but my goal would be to paint a fuller picture of, cause I think I represent a lot of people in our company.
Yeah.
You know, I'm definitely different, but I think there are things, you know, there are every girl things about me that I don't think it's been as easy to translate through Bando that I thought like, I don't have any problem. It doesn't like embarrass me. I mean, what you don't see is like the direct messages I get and the people that stop me in the street crying. And like, it's just like so insane in the best way possible that I was like, oh, it's just, and then it just fuels. Then I'm like, oh, I'll just like keep, how deep can I go?
Well, the question that I have is, do you feel like the dark side ever informs the products that you come up with?
No, we have a couple things. Like, we have the chill pills, phone case. Like, there are a few things that I slid in there that, like, had to do with, like, man, I have anxiety, you know? Yeah. But mostly, like, when I'm feeling that way, it's like, I don't want to produce anything or think about it. But I think if I've ever tried to introduce that, it's just like the decision has been made sort of about Bandel and what people want from it. And they really don't want that. So it's like the same when we try and do something black. I'm like, I like black. Like, black is cool. Most of the time they're like, oh no, we're getting that from another brand. Like, can you show us more like color or humor or flowers or, and I resisted that. There was probably a time, 2 or 3 years ago, where I was just like, I'm going to do it anyways. And we just didn't sell that stuff. And so again, I think there's like some fringe things that we'll always try and do, but that's the one curse of, I always think about Sandra Bullock.
What?
Which doesn't make any sense. But like, you know, just like straight up typecast actresses that like, it's just like anytime they would try and do anything but a rom-com, it's just like the audience just doesn't want it. And you know, they're probably exceptional actors in any genre. And that's how I feel about us. I think we could do sleek, modern. People in our design have like insane aesthetics. I mean, we live in LA, so it's like, it's in the air. And so I think like once I took my ego out of it and was just like, I can still be cool and like things outside of this, but you know, once it's established, then people just go to you for that.
But maybe, have you ever thought of creating like another brand?
You know, no. When way back when, before we sold the company, we had like 4 parts to Bandel that weren't necessarily, I mean, one was like a really high end vintage, which was where we started. And then one was like really accessible younger pieces. And I mean, in the end, we just combined it all. And so I think there's opportunities with our website to do that. And like just the e-commerce piece and just products that are made only for that. I think when I speak especially about a consumer's reaction to the brand and what they want from it, I'm talking more about wholesalers. And just like, because buyers on that level, rather than just like you're buying personally, it's like a spreadsheet and a math equation. So I do think we'll be able to evolve it. I mean, we have done some of that. And the beauty of the website is like, I can see something that I would like, but I didn't have to like design it, produce it,
right.
You know? So I think we'll be able to expand through that. But I feel like, I don't know, I'd be surprised if it was like really shifted away from where it is. But hey, I mean, never say never. So maybe.
Have you experimented with selling your products in other retailers as well?
Mm-hmm.
Is that happening? Is that an important part of the business as well?
Huge. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we're
when you said
75% wholesale.
I wasn't sure if you meant the products that you resell, but you mean
our products that we produce, yeah. Design and produce are primarily wholesale. I mean, we do a lot on our e-commerce site, but we're in basically every major retailer, like multi-door retailer in the US that would make sense,
right.
And overseas, and then like a ton of independent stores and then other e-commerce sites. So that still informs a lot of the decision-making of our business. So that's where it kind of, there is a divide, even though I think ultimately as a business, it would be great to be split down the middle and be half retail, half wholesale. But we don't have brick and mortar yet. So it's hard to do that kind of volume, compete with like what thousands of stores are doing on year1.com.
Is the wholesale side challenging from a creative standpoint? How do you feel about, I've done a little bit of that stuff, but just like POP and all those types of things. Is that a challenge for you guys?
Yeah. I mean, the most challenging part is that we have a different levels of a presence in other people within other people's story and aesthetic. And there's really only so much you can control. So that part is hard. And then the other part, like I'm saying, is I think it's just really easy to get pigeonholed. And generally speaking, people like the same thing over and over again. They don't actually want you to get that creative. Like they are just like, well, like that floral you did last year, like, could we just like have that again, but just change the colors a little
and
bit?
And when you say people, you mean the buyers?
I think the customer, you know, is, that's why I do think it's different. Like our .com customer, I feel like really tethered to them because we started as an e-commerce site. And I think a lot of those people have the context of the full story. Whereas like someone who's going into Macy's and discovering Bandeau would just have a different relationship with the brand. So it is, it like it's split more now than it was, even just like bestsellers, it, you know, wholesale versus retail tend to be really different. For me, I was just always thinking like those would be the cool creative people because like I love to shop and they love to shop, mm-hmm. but it's like, it's not, I mean, it's a, it's a money numbers. And I think like not to diss buyers, like, cause I'm sure there's like different levels of creativity and depending on who you're buying for, but in the end, they're accountable for someone else's money and taking that money and making more money from it. So it's not an emotional, it's not emotional. And right. that's like, I kind of count on it being emotional. And so it took me a long time to understand. I mean, so many years for me to understand that, like, that's not how you even communicate with those people.
Are all the collections you're designing intended for both retail and wholesale?
I wouldn't say all, but for the most part. And then sometimes we'll be like, oh, we should probably just do this on .com mm-hmm. or we don't really need this on .com, but we know it would be a great play in wholesale. And then I think like as we continue to expand and expand, I know a lot of my focus is going to be on our website over the next like 6 months. And so I think there's opportunities there for us to just do from inception of the idea on just .com. stuff because we do just less hoops to jump through. And the wholesale, for me, it's easier because it is much more formulaic. And once I realized that if I stopped resisting that formula, it we could get it done in half the time. So I did that.
Well, I feel like we started with comedy. I want to end on that.
We started with Kroll.
We started with Kroll. I know that you're a comedy fan. What other things in the realm of comedy have you been enjoying lately?
I like the show People of Earth.
Oh, tell me more about this. It just came out?
I think it's on season two, but I don't have cable, so I just like don't watch that many uh-huh. shows. But then I got a hold of my dad's cable information and was able to like get a bunch of different programming on my Apple TV. And I just like started watching the show. And I think it's maybe some of the people that did Parks and Rec. Hmm.
But it's just like a good,
it's like an ensemble comedy about this group of people that suspect they've been abducted, but like the aliens are really fun. It's just like funny. I don't know. I mean, I'm into my own comedy.
That's good. You have to be able to make yourself laugh. That's important.
I do think I wish that I did take a 4-hour improv workshop and I was horrible. I thought I was going to find my calling. I was like, guys, I probably won't come back from this. Like I'll probably just be an improv comedian. And then I was just like alarmingly bad at it. But yeah, I just like, I mean, I appreciate humor because on every level, because I think it solves problems. You know, it's a great outlet and everybody loves to laugh. And I think like turning something bad into a joke, like does it. A lot of people are put off by that, but I actually like that, so.
I'm with you. And yeah. I also did improv a little, like a very small amount. Yeah. And I was like, oh no.
It's so hard.
Very hard.
But there's so many great people that we're exposed to now that make it look so easy that you're like, oh yeah, this must be like a, you know, like a skill everyone has, but it's good. And then, like I said, my friends that have that Wild Horses, like they're, I feel like they're on fire. I actually was like, oh, I don't know if I want to go. Cause I always get kind of nervous for watching live improv. Cause I feel like I've seen some stuff not go well. And then you just feel really anxious for them. But these girls were so good. I mean, it's so, so funny and real and transparent and just everything that's good. So,
well, we're very spoiled in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I know. You'd have access to that like every hour of the day.
Yeah.
So,
well, thank you for bearing my voice and thank you to the listeners who made it all the way through. If people want to learn more about you and about Bandeau, what should they do?
Probably don't Google me. No, I don't know. I'm always like, I feel like weird stuff comes up. Well, I'm just Jen Gotch on Instagram. There's also a sexy Jen Gotch account that is run by me.
Oh,
a couple people were asking me.
It's not a parody account.
No, it is a parody account that I've created, okay. But it's private and I'm not accepting any. No,
it's just for yourself.
It's just for myself. And Bando is Shop Bando on Instagram and Bando.com on the World Wide Web.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.